You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. You're listening to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for subscribing on Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. Wrapping up our week, exploring some of the biggest questions in Miami Heat franchise history, some of the greatest what-if scenarios, what if a player comes, what if a player doesn't, and today, exploring some of the questions surrounding the greatest player in Miami Heat history. With the fifth pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Miami Heat select Chris Kaman out of the University of Central Michigan. Now that's a scenario that a lot of people expected to play out in 2003. We found out later on that Pat Riley was looking at Kaman as a possible addition. He was going to invest the fifth pick in the 2003 draft and bringing in another big man. And it was a decision that made a lot of sense, to be honest with you. Kaman had shown some polish. His scouting report actually shows that he's an above average leaper, a decent athlete with good footwork. He can finish around the basket with either hand. So he had some skills. He had some tools. He was struggling a little bit defensively, but he was a big body, 7 feet, 255 pounds. And so that was the kind of center that Pat Riley thought would be important and essential for Miami to achieve playoff success again. Remember, those were the bad years for Miami following the loss of Alonzo Mourning. He had left, obviously, in free agent as a free agent that year, but you know he'd been in and out of the lineup dealing with his vocal, well, let's say his kidney disease. He was struggling with that, obviously, and wasn't a consistent player for many years. So that was a three-year period in Miami Heat history where they only made the playoffs once. They made the playoffs in 2001. They didn't make it the following year. They wound up drafting Caron Butler with a 10th overall pick in 2002, and then they wound up struggling again to make the playoffs that next year. Even with Eddie Jones, Brian Grant, and some other players there, it's just they didn't have enough talent to get out of the Eastern Conference. And then, of course, they lose Alonzo Mourning in free agency. So for Pat Riley, the path to the playoffs required a big man. Obviously, he had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the Los Angeles Lakers. He had Patrick Ewing. He had Alonzo Mourning for much of his tenure here in Miami. And even though he had stepped down, well, actually, at the point of the draft, he hadn't stepped down yet. He likely thought that Miami needed a center, which is why Kaman seemed like such an appealing option. Again, a talented, skilled big man, at least at the collegiate level, a little bit older than Dwayne, a little bit more experience, and a guy they thought might have a long NBA career. That was 2003 for you when they still thought the center position would be one of an essential one, one that you could build a team around. That has been the thought process for as long as the NBA has been in existence. Going back to the 50s, you still needed a center. That was what was going to drive your team. If you had a skilled big man, you could build around him, and then everybody else would kind of fall into place. I guess it was easier to achieve smaller wing-type players or ball handlers, get those to play above their weight class, so to speak, and perform well. Either way, although Dwayne Wade had performed well at the collegiate level. Obviously, he had a great run in the Final Four. You know, he was also a bit of a tweener. They weren't quite sure what to make of him. He was on Miami's radar. That's not to say that he wasn't, you know, somebody that the Miami Heat were potentially looking at. He just didn't seem like he had a natural fit there. Obviously, you signed Eddie Jones also in free agency in 2003. You have a number of other players on the roster. You had Caron Butler there at the 2-3. Dwayne didn't really fit any kind of typical position. I mean, you still have Eddie Jones. Even though he's older, he's going to be your starting two guard. And in fact, he was for much of that 2003-04 season, what wound up being Dwayne's rookie year. Dwayne being a little undersized, generously listed at 6'4". You're not quite sure if he's going to be your ball handler. He's not your typical point guard. And this is the era of bigger guards, too. You had Penny Hardaway. You have Michael Jordan, obviously. Guys that were looking at, you know, you wanted somebody who was a skilled point forward type player. And Dwayne just didn't seem to fit that criteria. Again, a little undersized at 6'4". And so, you know, we weren't quite sure what his talent level was going to be at the NBA level. And so although he wound up performing very well, if you go back, there's a nice oral history that kind of chronicles the 2003 NBA draft. And Tim Grover, a trainer for Michael Jordan, Dwayne's agent, Henry Thomas, winds up contacting Grover and says, look, we need you to kind of get Dwayne ready for draft workouts. And he winds up doing some drills there with Grover. And although Grover had seen Dwayne perform well with Marquette, he struggled really badly in those drills. And he wasn't quite sure if this was the same talented guy that he had seen perform during the NCAA tournament. But then when they get to actual competing in a 5-on-5 type situation, all of a sudden Dwayne reaches a whole other level. And I think that's the essence of what Dwayne Wade was, is that he is such a fierce competitor that when he's challenged on the court, then all of a sudden he becomes a much different, much better player. And so there's also in that same oral history an account from Randy Fund, I think, who was a team president at that point in time, saying that they were waiting for Chris Kaman to come in for a workout. And on the other end of the floor, Dwayne Wade was having a workout there, and he just seemed like he was outperforming everybody. And Pat Riley actually said, "Who's that guy?" And Fund responded, "Well, that's Wade." And Riley was like, "Wow, this guy really stands out." Now, we all know the story about, Pat Riley coaching a really bad team in 02-03, sitting there in a gym in Milwaukee as his team's on the road, and then watching Dwayne Wade outperform everybody in the NCAA tournament while Riley was on the treadmill. That's the story, somewhat, I think, embellished probably over the course of time. But obviously he made an impression there. But I think from Riley's perspective, he still thought that a center was a way to go. And so that's why it came and made a lot of sense. Again, a typical big body. He was, there were some questions about his strength and things of that sort and his ability to commit defensively. But if you think about Miami Heat, culture, which was still in place in 2003, although probably taking a significant beating after the loss of Alonzo Mourning, you assume that you can get Kaman a little bit stronger, that you can get him into NBA body type shape. You can teach him defense and have him become a superstar type player. At least that was the thought process behind it. So let's explore what if Miami had actually taken Chris Kaman with the 5th pick in the 2003 NBA draft. I mean, that's a terrible thing to even consider. I can only imagine a lot of you kind of recoiling in horror as you hear of the possibilities of having Kaman as your superstar player moving forward. But I think it's an interesting question. Obviously, with Dwayne's overall impact in Heat franchise history, it's a pivotal point there. This, which is why the draft is so important and unimportant and difficult to predict all at the same time, because by all accounts, Kaman seemed like the better prospect coming up. I mean, and you even look into that NBA draft itself. You look at the first five players, LeBron James, clearly a no-brainer. Carmelo Anthony taken 3rd overall. He had achieved a championship at Syracuse that same season. But Darko Milicic taken 2nd by the Detroit Pistons. Who knows what would have happened if they had taken Carmelo Anthony? That's probably one of the biggest question marks in Pistons franchise history. Then, of course, you wind up having Chris Bosh taken 4th overall by the Toronto Raptors. What if they wind up taking Dwayne instead? He's the guy who kind of replaces McGrady. Fits alongside Vince Carter, maybe. That would have been a pretty athletic backcourt there with Dwayne and Vince Carter. I can just imagine the dunks being played out there and maybe the lob passes going from Dwayne to Vince Carter. Either way, they wound up selecting Chris Bosh instead and trading Vince Carter to the New Jersey Nets. So that would have been a very interesting scenario playing out in Canada. But from Miami's perspective, they take Kaman. He winds up becoming the immediate starting center with the Heat. Let's assume that Pat Riley still steps down, because I think even as great as Dwayne was in pre-draft workouts or in summer league and things of that sort, I think Pat still kind of just feels restless. I think he's tired. I think the last couple seasons dealing with Alonzo's injury, dealing with the constant losing to the New York Knicks, kind of seeing time pass you by a little bit. And then you start to realize, well, maybe you just lost the edge a little bit as far as your coaching is concerned. And he steps away anyway. He still hands the keys to the team over to Stan Van Gundy. So Van Gundy is the coach there of a roster that includes an older Eddie Jones. Maybe you still have Rafer Alston on the roster. You have Brian Grant there, who you had signed as a free agent in 2000. But he slides down to the power forward position now that you have Chris Kaman at center. Grant had been playing at center for most of the previous 3 seasons because with Alonzo out, Grant was forced to slide up as far as the roster is concerned. And he was wound up playing center, even though he was somewhat undersized at 6'8", 6'9". Dealing with a lot of oversized centers at that point, guys like Shaq, Yao Ming, and others. And so maybe this is a natural fit for Grant, and maybe he can continue to have even bigger numbers. Maybe he can put up bigger numbers with Kamen at your center there. As far as Kamen's own development, I think, you know, it's easy to judge Chris Kamen based on the player that he was after having been drafted by the Los Angeles Clippers. And not to say that he was, you know, a bad player. He did wound up reaching the All-Star at some point later in his career after a good year with the Los Angeles Clippers. He wound up staying with LA for about 7 seasons. His first rookie year, he started 61 games, played in 82 total games, and you know, just didn't put up big numbers. Again, it was a struggle for him to adjust to that game because of his defense. They had Mike Dunleavy coaching that team. Maybe he wasn't able to connect with the younger players there. And you look at that roster, it was already a badly assembled one. There was a lot of overlap as far as talent is concerned. You had guys like Elton Brand. You had Lamar Odom. You had Corey Maggette. You had Quentin Richardson. You know, Kamen was coming in there, and Brand was probably a better center than he was a power forward, and so he was kind of out of position too. And so it was difficult, and he wasn't getting a lot of touches with all that other, you know, assembled talent area. I mean, with Kamen there at center, you know, Elton Brand's getting most of those touches, and you have to kind of distribute it a little bit to Maggette. And of course, in 2003, Lamar Odom leaves Los Angeles to come to Miami. He's a restricted free agent, and he winds up coming and signing an offer sheet with the Heat and coming to Miami. Now, the situation there, one that I've talked about, but bears repeating, the Clippers are in a very unique situation in that they have three restricted players there. They had three players entering restricted free agency all in the same summer. Corey Maggette, who was a small forward shooting guard type. You had Lamar Odom kind of playing to three or four. And then you had Elton Brand playing the four or five. Elton Brand actually winds up signing an offer sheet with the Miami Heat, first and foremost, a huge offer sheet. The Clippers decide to match that. They already had signed Maggette to an extension, if I'm not mistaken. So Maggette was under wraps. Elton Brand was under wraps. And then that frees up Lamar Odom to explore other options. Lamar Odom winds up signing that same offer sheet with the Heat. And then he winds up coming into Miami because Donald Sterling, the owner of the Clippers at the time, was notoriously cheap and a poor decision maker. And he winds up signing Elton Brand and Maggette and letting Lamar Odom go. Of course, Lamar winds up having a fantastic season just 1 year with the Heat. But it's a great season where he shows off that incredible versatility. And then he winds up being traded the following season to the Los Angeles Lakers as part of the trade to acquire Shaquille O'Neal. And that's where things get really interesting because there's no longer that same roster here in Miami. All of a sudden, you've got no Dwayne Wade. You've got no Lamar Odom. You still have Caron Butler there, but everything changes. So, I mean, that's basically your starting lineup for the Heat is Rafer Allison at the point, Eddie Jones at the two, Caron Butler at the three, Brian Grant sliding down to the four, and Kamen at the five. I'll get into what exactly the Miami Heat would have looked like moving forward if they had drafted Chris Kamen instead of Dwayne Wade. You're listening to Locked On Heat. If you've been listening to the show over the last few weeks, you know how I feel about Built Bar. Quite frankly, it's just the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. We've got a box delivered to us by courtesy of the network and the company itself, and they're just blown away by how good those flavors were. My wife and I love them. Everybody here in the family has tried them, and it's really taken off as far as just a go-to snack now. There's so many different flavors to choose from. You're bound to find one that you love. Again, 21 different flavors, all of them, from what I've heard from guys around the network, really love the way they taste. If you like mint brownie, if you like caramel, if you like banana, if you like all these different types of flavor profiles, Built Bar has you covered. With 21 different options to choose from, you're bound to find one that you'll like. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. And they're exactly the kind of bar that you're looking for when you need a go-to snack, but you don't want to weigh yourself down, or if you don't have the time to prepare a full meal, something that I find myself dealing with almost on a daily basis. Everyone around the network says they're great. They're easy to chew. They taste awesome, and they're good for you. And right now, if you go to BuiltBar.com, you use the promo code LOCKEDON, that's one word, LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order. A great tasting protein bar that's good for you too. Heat have selected Chris Kamen with the 5th overall pick in the 2003 NBA draft. And from there, things start to get very dicey for Miami. It's not an ideal lineup, obviously. Much of that team still seemed like, well, they were missing something. Eddie Jones was older. Caron Butler wasn't quite a superstar. He was a versatile player, kind of a tweener himself, a little bit too big to play the two, a little bit too small or a little slow to play the three. It was it wasn't quite a great fit. Like, the thing with Caron was always that he was just very, very skilled. Like, he was versatile, but he didn't have a natural positional fit. And so much of the league at that point was all about guys sliding into your prototype position. And, you know, that roster was kind of odd, which is why a player like Lamar Odom kind of fit so well, because he could do so much. He could play the three, the four. He could even stretch out to the five. And with his ability to shoot the ball from the perimeter, to make passes, and to get to the hoop with his size, he was just a unicorn in a sense, when a lot of people weren't expecting that type of player. He was kind of out of position in Los Angeles for the first 3 years of his career. Again, with Elton Brand on there, with a number of other players on that roster, he just didn't seem to quite fit. And so with Miami, it was a good opportunity for him to bring a different dimension than what Brian Grant did. And so the move made sense when Pat Riley acquired Lamar in 2003. But it doesn't make any sense when you've got, you know, when you don't have Dwayne Wade on the roster. And so that's the interesting part here. So your lineup with Kamen, again, Brian Grant, Caron Butler at the three, Eddie Jones, and probably Rafer Allison starting at the two, at the one, rather. So what happens next? Well, who knows? They probably don't make the playoffs that year. Maybe some players like Grant and Caron get more opportunities. Maybe they put up some bigger numbers there. Maybe they're able to kind of help Miami get to some, you know, restoration of decency there. Not, again, falling short of a 500 level team. That team actually wound up going 42-40 under Stan Van Gundy in his first season as head coach. And you have to give credit to Van Gundy. He was a good coach, a good motivator. And with that kind of young eagle-ish team, let's say, even with the veterans on that team, they were probably, again, towards the tail end of their careers and not necessarily worried about putting up big numbers. You could probably have gotten them to play to their potential. So Kamen might have actually thrived in Miami earlier on, because they probably would have given him a lot of touches. We know that Van Gundy can coach centers. He coached Shaq eventually, but he also winds up coaching Dwight Howard in Orlando. But that's a different scenario, because in Miami, then you have that first year there with Kamen as your starting center. You don't have the kind of assets to acquire Shaquille O'Neal in 2004. So even though Shaq winds up becoming disgruntled the following, or that season, what would have been Dwayne's rookie season in Miami, and said, now who knows what would have happened with him. But Shaq still angry in 2004. He doesn't look at Miami as a roster worth joining. You've got Kamen, your first round pick from the year before. You're not going to trade him in exchange for Shaquille O'Neal. Although obviously, Shaquille is a huge upgrade over Kamen. You've invested in you know, a guy like Chris Kamen. You probably think to yourself, well, maybe he has some potential there. The interesting part is, what if Corey Maggette had joined Miami in 2003 instead of Lamar Odom? You know, that's a possibility. When they enter restricted free agency, those three players, Brand, Odom, and Maggette, from the Clippers' perspective, maybe they don't necessarily need Corey Maggette anymore. Why? Because they probably would have selected Dwayne Wade 6th overall. After Miami selects Kamen with the 5th pick, the 6th pick going to the Clippers winds up being Dwayne Wade out of Marquette as their star moving forward. Now they have the choice to make between those three restricted free agents. They let Corey Maggette go. Why? They've already got Quentin Richardson on the roster, but he's 6'6". He can slide up to the three a little bit. You've got Kayon Dueling there as your point guard. You've got Dwayne as a primary ball handler, secondary ball handler player. Then you've got Richardson kind of stretching the floor as a three a little bit. You've got Lamar Odom as a 3-4, and Elton Brand plays the five. You have different options there. And for Miami, then you wind up getting Maggette as a free agent. Maybe he kind of helps push either Eddie Jones or Caron Butler a little bit further. Again, I mean, Maggette was a good player from Duke. He had some athleticism, he had some talent, he just wasn't able really to have much of an impactful NBA career. But maybe Miami starts looking at another player to kind of add to that current roster, knowing that Eddie Jones is eventually going to retire. And in fact, he winds up retiring in just a few seasons after Dwayne's rookie year. But I think the interesting question is, because we're looking at not just Miami and what would they be like with Chris Kamen as your starting center, but what happens if Dwayne goes to LA? Does he become a superstar there? Again, Dunleavy is the coach. Mike Dunleavy Sr. is the coach in Los Angeles. He winds up coaching that Clippers team. Is he able to connect with Dwayne the same way that Stan Van Gundy does? And does he help him reach his full potential there? does he have the opportunity to kind of just carry that team, even though they have older established players or even younger players looking to prove themselves, like Lamar, like Elton Brand, etc.? Do Elton Brand and Lamar Odom take a back seat to allow Dwayne to kind of surge past him as far as his overall ability is concerned? Those are big questions there, but let's assume that that's how it plays out. Lamar, a great role player. Elton Brand, although he was an all-star type player, I don't think that he was necessarily your alpha type mentality. I don't think he ever wanted to be a superstar of a team. And so I do think that they would have both deferred to Dwayne a little bit, because just Dwayne is naturally more fierce, more ruthless as a competitor. So I think he winds up taking over that team and becoming their superstar there pretty quickly. With the Clippers, then, they're able to get past, you know, go deep into the playoffs. And I think eventually they wind up becoming the playoff team there. Interestingly enough, what if they're the team that winds up acquiring Shaquille O'Neal? Shaq wants to be in Los Angeles. He just has to switch sides. All of a sudden, the Clippers are a much more respectable team. Imagine the drama that would have played out in Los Angeles. Still with Kobe in the same building there. And you have Shaquille O'Neal in Los Angeles alongside Lamar Odom and Dwayne Wade. That would have been a phenomenal situation. You move Elton Brand. Maybe you move Quentin Richardson in exchange for Shaquille O'Neal. There was the kind of potential there. They had another first-round pick in the future they could have thrown in there. So many different scenarios. They don't wind up drafting Michael Olowokandi. Who knows what happens? This is the fascinating aspect here, is that there are so many different options. But even further down the line, in 2010, maybe the big three forms were the Clippers and not the Heat. What if LeBron, who we talked about in yesterday's episode, maybe he looks at those Clippers teams and he says to himself, look, I want to go to Los Angeles. I have a future there where I can build my brand, where I can go into movies and TV and other forms of entertainment. I can continue to grow and become a billionaire even sooner than I would have elsewhere. That was why New York was such an interesting option for him. But with Los Angeles, it becomes just as interesting an option too. Now you still have the sun, you still have the weather to raise Bronny and your kids and your wife. You know, your family is happy in Los Angeles. You have connections to the Los Angeles area already. And now you have a team in the Los Angeles Clippers with Dwayne Wade, some championship success alongside Shaquille O'Neal, who had signed with the Clippers instead. And then LeBron James joins there in 2010, the same way it all played out in Miami, but it plays out for the Clippers instead. Wow. That is just a mind-numbing possibility. So many different things that could have played out differently. And all instead, Miami is dealing with Chris Kaman as their starting center. Who knows what would have been like. Of course, we don't have to worry about that possibility, because Miami did wind up drafting Dwayne Wade in 2003. He did wind up carrying the team to a championship just a few seasons later. But then as a free agent in 2010 and then again in 2016, what if those decisions had gone a little bit differently for Dwayne in Miami? I'll explore that next on Locked On Heat. It's hard to find the time to sit down and read and learn more and continue to develop. When you don't have free time, you can't read or work on personal development, but there's an incredible app that solves this problem. I highly recommend it. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is really unique. It works on your phone, your tablet, your web browser. It takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down to just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to. I like Blinkist when I'm just curious about a topic or anything that I may not know too much about, and you have so many different options. Again, thousands and thousands of different books that they have available for you, and you just have to commit 15 minutes at a time. It's not the same thing as devoting hours or days to trying to read the same book or trying to get into it or finding the time. You get interrupted. With Blinkist, you just get the key points, and I think that's such a great advantage because it helps boil down those points for you in a nice, easy to read or listen to form. With Blinkist, you can get unlimited access to read or listen to a massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all the books you want, and all for one low price. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. You go to Blinkist.com/NBA and you try it for free for 7 days, and you save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/NBA to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25% off, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/NBA. Remember, Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. I've gotten a lot of feedback regarding these what-if shows. Hopefully, they've provided some interesting entertainment for you. I'll get back to more current NBA-related topics next week. But for now, let's move past that nightmare situation where we don't wind up drafting Dwayne Wade in 2003. We wind up selecting Wade, thankfully, in 2003, not Chris Kaman, not the beginning of the Kaman era in South Florida. Wade becomes a future All-Star, future Hall of Fame player, and of course an NBA champion in 2006. You do wind up acquiring Shaquille O'Neal, and although that situation winds up breaking apart eventually just a few years later, at least you get a title out of it. But now 2010 rolls around, and Dwayne has some interesting questions and some different options. And as I explored in the LeBron James episode from earlier this week, Dwayne was very, very close to leading to the Chicago Bulls there. And it could just as easily have happened if LeBron chooses differently. If LeBron chooses to go to New York because he wants to continue to build his brand, because he wants to partner with Amar'e Stoudemire there, and who knows, maybe even Chris Bosh joins him. Maybe he chooses to stay in Cleveland. It would have worked out for him there too. Again, with Chris Bosh there as a free agent, maybe they're able to have that kind of talented core to bring a championship to the Cavaliers a little bit sooner than 2016. And then Dwayne, well, there's no option for him. There's no reason for him to stay in Miami. He can join a very talented hometown team with Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah and Lou Alding, etc., and then he can go and supplement there and continue to push them deeper into the playoffs. Maybe he has a connection with Tom Thibodeau. Maybe he realizes he can be the next Jordan there. Again, he's got championship experience. He knows what it's like to play with big egos because he played with Shaquille O'Neal. He knows what it's like to be a near MVP type player, one of the top five players in the league. He can join any team he damn well wants to, and that's the reality there. Like, now we think of Dwayne as older. We think of Dwayne as, you know, a guy who took less money so he can continue to come back to Miami. But what if in 2010 he says, nah, hell no, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not loyal to Miami. I don't have to stay committed to the Heat. There's no reason to come here. There's no big three forming in Miami. I can go and do whatever I want to. And I think that's the fascinating aspect here, is that he was very close to joining the Bulls. And though he goes there, he goes to Chicago, and now all of a sudden from Miami, they're left with nothing. And again, I've explored that in the LeBron episode. You got Michael Beasley. You got Mario Chalmers, you've got a couple other casts up there, and you got a whole bunch of salary cap space. We ridicule the New York Knicks over the last few seasons for clearing the decks to acquire Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. And what if it's the exact scenario here in South Florida? And I think that's, you know, when you consider what could have happened, just as easily could have played out that way, where Miami becomes a laughingstock. Instead, the big three forms here in South Florida. Pat Riley's the godfather. He's the executive of the year. He's the guy who could get everything done. That's where the legacy factor kind of plays into, because everything, your legacy is so dependent on just a fraction of an inch here, you know, where you're looking at things could have just as easily gone one way or another. Somewhere out there, like, if you've listened to the show for any prolonged period of time, you know I'm a huge comic book fan. And one of the things that they explore over the course of many, many comic books is alternate possibilities, alternate futures, alternate timelines, a multiverse, if you will. And so if you look at all the different options, there is a scenario there where Dwayne doesn't come to Miami, where LeBron goes to New York, where Chris Bosh signs with the Cavaliers. Who knows what happens? And so much of it changes everything. One little instance there. If you've seen Back to the Future, but if you're not necessarily a comic book fan, if you've seen Back to the Future, you come in through the right door instead of the left and you don't meet your wife. You come in through a different, you know, you go to a different school. You go to somewhere else completely different. You go to a different city. You don't take a flight. And next thing you know, your life completely changes. And that's how it plays out with Miami too, where Miami all of a sudden, instead of a four-year era of incredible success and two championships, you're forced to rebuild. And Pat Riley is no longer one of the greatest executives in NBA history. Eric Spoelstra never sniffs the Hall of Fame as one of the most winning coaches in NBA history. You don't have the great memories of LeBron and Dwayne and Chris Bosh here in South Florida. So much of it changes. And it's, there's no way of knowing how it plays out, because then all of a sudden in 2010, you know that Riley would have tried to rebuild, but what if he doesn't? What if he chooses instead to retire? There was a great piece from ESPN a few years ago by Wright Thompson where they kind of explore how close Riley is to always wanting to retire, to just drifting off into the sunset in Malibu and driving a convertible out around town. that's still a possibility. It could happen, although this year seems like he's got the contender that he actually thinks that he's waiting to build. Maybe he's just waiting to acquire Giannis Antetokounmpo a couple years from now, but that's a whole other story and a whole other what-if scenario. For now, though, you're looking at 2010. Pat Riley can't get it done. He can't close a deal just the way he couldn't close it with Gordon Hayward or Kevin Durant or any other big free agent that he's tried to meet with at some point. Because, you know, it's you swing a lot, you miss a lot. And that's just the reality. You know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And in 2010, the biggest shot of Riley's career winds up falling short. So Dwayne leaves to Chicago, and then he's able to take that team to a championship success. He's able to rekindle some of the glory years from Jordan's era and bring it back to his hometown there. He winds up having a hell of a career, maybe even a Hall of Fame career, where he just has to split time between Miami and Chicago. He just winds up committing to the Bulls full time. That's also a nightmare scenario. It's a fascinating, fascinating possibility. But, okay, let's scratch all that. Again, the Heat draft Dwayne in 2003. In 2010... the Big Three era plays out just as it actually did in Miami's reality. But now you have another interesting scenario here, another great what if. What if in 2016, Pat Riley doesn't screw the pooch royally and he re-signs Dwayne for as much money as he wants and keeps Dwayne as a free agent? He doesn't let Dwayne leave to Chicago the way he does in 2016. Well, that's a little trickier because then by that point now you've got 13 years of Dwayne's career already established, the great stories and the great connection there. Dwayne is a part of franchise history forever now, and he gets to write his own story yet again. He signs, a two-year deal the same way he did with, Chicago in 2016. And then that team is different because what we do remember the 2016 season was that, obviously Dwayne leaves and then they kind of force Chris Bosh out the door a little bit. And they say, look, we're worried about Chris's injuries. His blood clot situation could, resume at any point. And we're talking about a life-threatening situation. And they kind of just say, Chris, we can't let you play here. We can't let you practice here. But maybe with Dwayne, that changes. Maybe they kind of are willing to take a chance. Maybe Chris is able to regain some of that form. Maybe he never develops blood clots again. That's impossible. That's a terrible, slippery slope to go down because Miami could be put in a situation where they might be endangering Chris's life just so that they can eke out a little bit more success during Dwayne's later years. But let's just assume that maybe Chris is healthy. Maybe he's able to come back and play out the last few years of his contract. That would be the most optimistic option. But they don't add Dion Waiters, obviously. He won't get the same opportunities here that he would have elsewhere. And as a free agent, out of the Oklahoma City Thunder, maybe he re-signs with the Thunder. Maybe he goes elsewhere. They kind of, remember, they had rescinded their offer to him as a restricted free agent, and he winds up just becoming a free agent, an unrestricted free agent, with different options. Now, he says that he chooses Miami in 2016 because of the better opportunities, because of the better fit. And he had more lucrative offers to go elsewhere, he probably explores those and maybe his career takes a different path. But as far as the Heat are concerned, you've got Goran Dragic, he's still under contract. You got Dwayne there and they have to work out their relationship a little bit better because that was still not a struggle, but they didn't necessarily have the same kind of push and pull. You remember the 7-11 combo between Goran and Dion was really successful, partly because they both played similarly in that they want to push the floor, they want to get to the basket. Dwayne a little bit slower, easing into the half-court offense. That was still, again, not exactly a great fit next to Goran. Maybe Goran slides to the bench. Just a possibility. First and foremost, though, now that you've got Dwayne under contract for who knows how much money, you don't sign Tyler Johnson. He gets that offer from the Brooklyn Nets. Sean Marks gets to keep their boy. They sign him as a big free agent. And good for Tyler. He gets all the money that he winds up collecting from Miami and Phoenix anyway. But maybe he has a chance there to establish himself as a star. Unlikely, just because there was always going to be a ceiling on what Tyler Johnson could do. But he doesn't sign with Miami. And your starting lineup then is Goran Dragic, Dwayne Wade, and Justice Winslow. At least three-fifths of it. Maybe you've got Chris Bosh back, hopefully. But if not, do you sign Derek Williams on a one-year prove-it deal? Do you sign James Johnson on that same similar contract? You've got Hassan Whiteside. You've got him making a whole heck of a lot of money. Remember, he signs in 2016. And although there's friction between Whiteside and Dwayne on the roster, keeps Hassan from becoming full-blown knucklehead, which is in fact what does wind up happening when he does sign that huge contract with the Heat. And maybe you get a better, more efficient version of Whiteside over the next couple of seasons. I think that's the way it probably would have played out. And although it would have been great to see Chris Bosh there if he had stayed healthy somehow, that seems very unlikely. You have to hope that Miami doesn't take an unnecessary risk just to be able to get to the playoffs. But they've shown over the past that when it comes to injuries, you know, they're willing to kind of push you a little bit more than you would like to be pushed. And so you're kind of forced on the floor a little bit. They did it with Justice this year. They did it with Dion a couple years ago. Maybe they would have done it with Chris Bosh if they had actually thought that they could have competed for a playoff position in 2016 and would have been one of Dwayne's last seasons in Miami. And then that's another thing, too, is that he signs that two-year deal. He makes the kind of money that he wind up making for the Chicago Bulls. And then there is no last dance. His last season is the 2017-18 season. He winds up probably helping Miami reach the playoffs in 2016 and 2017 and 2018. He goes out on a high note there. There's no last dance for him in Miami. And then you have, you know, Justice. Maybe he doesn't have to be the kind of... you don't expect him to be a superstar. He just winds up becoming a versatile defender, playmaker in the starting lineup. Same thing with Josh Richardson. The expectations for Josh in 2016 went through the roof, just as they were for Justice, because with Dwayne's departure, all of a sudden you're looking for somebody to step up in that capacity. And of course, they were even more magnified in 2017 when you look at Josh Richardson, and the hope there, at least from the Heat coaching staff, is that he'd become the go-to player, the guy who could score in clutch situations. Of course, he never really quite lived up to that hope, but that was the feeling, is that he was going to be that guy. And with Dwayne on that roster, you don't have those expectations. And so you have a different younger core kind of retooling around the older Dwayne Wade. And maybe Goran's able to continue to achieve some all-star type numbers. I mean, he was even better in 2016-17 than he was the following season when he actually made the all-star team. So who knows how those statistics would have played out with Dwayne Wade there. It's again, I keep going back to that fascinating complexity of all this, because one you know, what they refer to as the butterfly effect, where, you know, a butterfly flaps its wings and you have a tsunami on the other side of the world. And while I think that might be an exaggerated version of what we're talking about over the last week or so, there's just really, really interesting possibilities that change if something goes one way instead of the other. And so with Dwayne Wade, the greatest player in Miami Heat franchise history, how much his legacy would have changed here if he leaves in 2010, if he goes to Los Angeles in 2003, if he stays in 2016. Maybe he's not embraced by South Florida. Maybe he doesn't define the Heat franchise the way he has. Maybe he doesn't kind of help continue Heat culture there. When one of the statistics I pointed out dozens of times is that Alonzo Mourning and Dwayne Wade have been on this roster for over two decades. You know, either one of those players have been on the roster for over two decades, defining and becoming a natural extension of what Pat Riley tried to implement as a team executive. But, you know, look at Riley's legacy. Is he still viewed as one of the greatest executive? Is he just a has-been, an empty Armani suit there? Such a terrible possibility there. But just as easily could have played out if Dwayne leaves in 2010. And, you know, if he stays in 2016, there's no need to put the key under the mat there, because Dwayne never leaves. And he kind of helps reestablish some of the goodwill that was lost when he did join the Bulls. Instead, he kind of just continued to show players around the league that this is a franchise that you can, you know, retire in, that you can grow old in, that will embrace your legacy, whatever it might be. But let's not consider, you know, let's not even think about the possibility. If he never joins the Bulls in 2016, does Jimmy Butler ever join the team? What happens then? You know, when you have those options, and in 2019, Jimmy Butler never forces his way out, maybe the Heat still swing a trade for him in 2018. They're able to pull the trigger there. Dwayne's retired now, and they do include Josh Richardson in a deal, and they acquired Jimmy Butler in 2018 instead of having him sent from Minnesota to Philadelphia instead. But that's a whole different what-if scenario, and an interesting question nonetheless. Thank you so much for listening. This show has been brought to you by Built Bar. Again, the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. Thank you so much to Built Bar and Blinkist for sponsoring today's show. Make sure to check out Rejecting the Screen with Noah Kozlov and Adam Stanko, as well as Chad Ford's Big Board, now both on the Locked On Podcast Network. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLHeat or email me at lockedonheat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, Dean.